We start the recording. So that is done. And finally, okay, we're going to share screen in a second. So where are we at? We're still working through this Parakeet Dalit story of the sort of the lead up to the rebellion. It's a very important parak because it really sets up all of the players, David, Avshalom, Yoav, in the events that will happen over the next couple of chapters. What we saw last week was the end of the chapter where David understood from the Shatkuit exactly what the agenda was, which was to bring back Avshalom. David agrees, he turns to Yoav and he says, go bring back Avshalom. And then he turns and he puts Avshalom on house arrest and says, you're not coming into the palace. We talked a little bit about the significance of what it would mean if David would just embrace Avshalom, kiss him, embrace him as he does at the end of the perek, which is essentially a way of giving him a public official pardon from the king for all of his behavior. That would essentially give him the power in the palace that's designated as the heir to the throne, if you will, the Yoresh Etzer, especially after Amnon is no longer. And that would sort of be the next step to the rebellion. And that's exactly what happens. At the end of the perek, David agrees to Avshalom's request to see him, and he embraces him and he kisses him. And the next pasuk, literally beginning of Perek Tetvav, is the beginning of the rebellion. And so it kind of sets up the first question we ask, which is why invite him back from exile if you're not going to pardon him? And why wait 2 years and then pardon him if you are in fact going to bring him back? So there's all that tension going on in this perek. The other part of the parak, which we're not going to address today, that's on the agenda for next week, is this mashal of the Isha Tkuit. That's sort of the final piece of the puzzle. What is the message there that is the catalyst to all of the events that we are reading about? And the third variable, which we began to talk about at the end of the shiur last week, and I want to spend a little more time on this evening, is the role of Yoav. Who Yoav is and what role Yoav plays in all of this. Because as we can see, and here I'm going to share my screen with you. I just need to do two things to make this work. I need to put that into speaker view and full screen. We'll put your videos over here. Okay. As we can see in the parak, Yoav's role in all of this is quite significant. The perek starts with Yoav as the catalyst. Vayeda Yoav ben Tzruya ki lev hamelech alav shalom. It's Yoav who sees, who understood that David is desiring to see Avshalom. He can't just approach David and say, "Okay, why don't you bring him back from exile?" After all, David is angry. Avshalom's committed genocide, he's regicide, he's killed the crown prince. I mean, Avshalom is in exile for good reason. So he sets up the story of the Isha Tkuit to kind of convince David of the necessity of this act. Her role, we still have to explain, but it's clearly Vayishlach Yoav Tko Vayikach Misha Misha Chachama. It's her, clearly Yoav's role who engages her services to convince the king, whether it's a lie or whether it's her personal story. But in all cases, Yoav is the one who sets this set of events in motion. And then I'm going to jump to the part of the perek where David finally, he realizes from her words that whatever it is in what she said, that Yoav had put her up to this. And so he challenges her, and he says to her, King said to her, don't hide anything from me. I'm going to ask you a question. I want a direct answer. Speak, my king. Vayomer HaMelech, Hayad Yoav Itach. So whatever she had said that triggered in David a recognition that Yoav was the catalyst, he recognizes it and he says it to her. He challenges her and he says, Hayad Yoav Itach b'chol zot. And of course she says, of course, and yet she can't deny it. And she praises David's wisdom. Adoni chacham kechochmat malacha elokim. You are like a wisdom of an angel. You figure it all out. Okay, it's not hard to figure out. We'll see why. But nonetheless, finally, so David recognizes that it is Yoav who put her up to this whole ruse in order to convince him to bring back Avshalom. Okay, Yoav, I agree. Go and bring back Avshalom. Brings back Avshalom, and of course, we talked last week about the fact that he's willing to bring Avshalom back to Yerushalayim. He's not willing to bring Avshalom into the palace. He's not willing to risk what Avshalom's agenda would be were he to step foot in the palace, knowing full well that at the end of the parak, the moment he gives him this public pardon, Vayishak HaMelech LaAvshalom, the next pasuk reads, Vayihi Me'achorechen Vayas LaAvshalom Merkava V'susim V'chamishim Yishratzim Lefanav. Chariot, horses, 50 men to run before him, proclaim himself as the heir to the throne. So David's not willing to give him that presence until Yoav is convinced by Avshalom, for various reasons we'll talk about, that it is necessary. And so at the end of the parak, Vayomer Avshalom el Yoav, Hinei shalachti lech lamor b'ayin, Hinei v'yishachadcha al ha-melech, I want you to bring me to the king. Vayavo Yoav el ha-melech v'yaged lo. So Yoav goes back to the king and he says to him, you know what, Avshalom really wants to see you. Vayavo el ha-melech. So he should come to the king. He comes and they kiss and there's a pardon and everybody lives happily ever after for all of about half a verse between chapter 14 and chapter 15. Okay. So if I ask the question, what role does Yoav play in all this? I've got David, I've got Avshalom. Nishat Koit is the kind of the catalyst in the conversation. Where is Yoav? Is the ultimate enabler to all of this, right? He sees David's mood. He hires the Elishat Kuit. He convinces David to go and bring Avshalom, convinces David to see Avshalom. He's sitting there orchestrating the whole thing. And based solely on what I just read, we have to explore what role is Yoav playing here. Yoav certainly doesn't strike me as somebody who is on best terms with Avshalom. Yoav is the one who ultimately kills Avshalom in the battle of Yerafraim. So I'm not 100% sure I know what Yoav's role in all of this is, other than the fact that he is David's general and he sees the opportunity or sees the circumstances of David's emotional distress over the exile of Avshalom. So I actually want to start with the Medrash. I'm going to start with the Gemara that places the story of Yoav in a very complex position. Actually, before we look at that, we need to look at one more story, and that is the beginning of the Book of Kings. Sefer Melachim, so this we talked a little bit about in a different context. There are essentially two major revolts against David during his lifetime. One's against David and the other is against his successor. Meaning Avshalom launches a full-scale rebellion against David in order to declare himself the king or the heir to the throne. And we'll talk about whatever it is that he makes that declaration. After that rebellion is put down, in the end, Avshalom dies. And he dies very violently in the Battle of Yerafraim in the civil war on the east bank of the Yard. At the end of David's life, beginning of Melachim Aleph Perek Aleph, we read this as the Haftorah of Pasha Vayechi, we find that David, in the transition moment to his successor, and here Shlomo is already born, here Shlomo is clearly part of the conversation, right? Unclear whether he is part of the conversation in our chapter, Parak Yudalit. Here it certainly is. The Melech David Zakem Ba Bayamim. David is now old. He's on his deathbed. He's cold. Whatever the circumstances, the story of Avishag of Shunamit, I'm going to skip for now, not our issue. But there is a rebellion brewing. Who is the rebellion brewing with? This we read last week when we talked about the description of Avshalom as very handsome and beautiful. Remember that? And the implication was that he was worthy of kingship because he was a man of such stature. And we have exactly the same description here. Adoniah ben Chagit exalted himself in heart, in stature, saying, I will be king. Who is Adoniah ben Chagit? So if you remember the list of the children of David, take Shlomo out of the picture. The children of David born in Hebron are listed there. So the oldest is Amnon. Then there's a son by the name of Daniel or Kalev, who is the son of Abigail, Eshet Naval Karmeli. He's never in the running for the throne. We talked about that a long time ago. The third is Avshalom ben Maacha, Bat Maacha, Melech Geshur, ben Talmaya, Bat Talmaya, Melech Geshur. And the fourth is Adoniah ben Chagit said, Ani Amloch. Because at this point in the picture, he is next in line. Why is he next in line? Well, Amnon is not eligible because
he's dead.
Okay, you have to be alive. First requirement of kingship. Second one is Daniel or Kalev. For whatever reason, he's never in the running. We had suggested the possibility that he's actually Avigail's son, not David's. Separate issue, never in the running. The third is Avshalom. Well, Avshalom is no longer in the running either because
he's dead.
He's also dead. So that leaves us with Daniel. He took exactly the same formula that Avshalom took. Rechev, parashim, horses, chariots, 50 men. Think Mordechai on the horse, Haman walking before him, right? That suggestion that Haman had, the audacity of that suggestion to put somebody on the horse and have somebody else walk before him and proclaim him as somebody who the king wants to honor. You understand the audacity and the chutzpah of that suggestion to Achashverosh, because that's exactly what these kind of symbolic moments are. And then it says, V'gamu tov to'ar ma'od, he was also very handsome and very fine looking. The Oto Yaldach and Avshalom. And he was born after Avshalom, which means he's next in line. One more pasuk. Vayu dvarav im Yoav ben Suriya v'im Evyatar Kohen v'ya'azru achrei Adoniyahu. He consulted with Yoav ben Suriya and the Kohen Avyatar, the high priest, and they supported Adoniyahu. And but as far as the rest of the group, Tzadok HaKohen v'Yonayahu ben Yoyada and Natan HaNavi and other people in David's own group of warriors, they sided with David, not with Adoniyahu, and the stage is set for another civil war, except this one gets averted because David has the strength to appoint Shlomo publicly as his successor. Shlomo's appointment foils this rebellion. And so the rebellion really ends before it starts. There's no war, it just ends. Okay? However, you can understand that whoever sided with Adoniyahu against Shlomo is in serious trouble, including
Yoav
ben Tzruya. All right. The story of Yoav ends in Perek Bet, in Pasuk Chaf Chet. Veshmu'a ba'a, after Shlomo is on the throne, and Shlomo spells Evyatar from being a Kohen, and he sends him back to Anatot, And Leviatara, Kohen Amar, Amar Melech, Anatot Lech, go, exiles him to Anatot. Anatot is a city of Kohanim, same city from which Yirmiyahu eventually comes. And Vashmu'a ba'ad Yoav. And the news came to Yoav. What news? That Shlomo is now putting down this rebellion and essentially killing or exiling anybody who had sided with Adoniyah. Ki Yoav nata acharei Adoniyah. Because Yoav had followed Adoniyahu and had followed him to this rebellion. Whereas, and here's our jumping point, V'acharei Avshalom lo nata. He sided with Adoniyah, but he did not side with Avshalom. And therefore he runs to the Mizbeach and he claims asylum on the altar, and Shlomo HaMelech has to take him out of the Mishkan in order to kill him. And there's a whole story. Eventually Shlomo takes care of, he puts him under house arrest, he tries to escape, he kills him. Not our issue for now. But this pasuk is fascinating. That Yoav sided with Adoniyah, therefore he forfeits his life. But he didn't side with Avshalom. Why is that reference here so interesting? Why is the fact that he didn't side with Avshalom's rebellion, even though he sided with Adoniyah's rebellion, so important for us, but so intriguing in this context?
Because he convinced, Yoav convinced David to take Avshalom back.
That is true, so we'll have to figure that one out. But in this particular moment, in this pasuk, in this context, why is this phrase so odd?
Because it's inconsistent. Why would he didn't follow one rebellious son? Why was he following another rebellious son?
Fair. It's inconsistent, right? If he really wants to rebel against David, he had all the opportunity to do so at the time of Avshalom. Why does he wait for Adoniyahu? But I would go even one step further. I would argue that this phrase is totally irrelevant. Why? It's totally irrelevant. It's like the ultimate non sequitur. What's the context here? Right? The context here is the rebellion of Adoniyahu and the guilt of Yoav for siding with Adoniyahu, and therefore Shlomo's retribution against Adoniyahu. The fact that he didn't side with Avshalom is irrelevant information. His guilt is based on the fact that he followed Adoniyahu. He's guilty by the current circumstances. The fact that he didn't do this generation ago, a rebellion ago, is irrelevant information. Unless you want to say, maybe I'll judge him favorably, but there's no judging favorably here. Shlomo executes him. So the insertion of this phrase, V'acharei Avshalom lo nata, catches the attention of Chazal. And here's what the Gemara says. That's the pasuk in source 7 I just showed you. Here's what the Gemara says. What does it mean when it says lo nata? My lo nata. What does it mean that Yoav did not follow Avshalom? Amar of Yehuda, bikesh lintot v'lo nata. It tells me that he really wanted to follow Avshalom. He really wanted to side with Avshalom. It was in his bones. He really wanted to side with Avshalom's rebellion. But he didn't do it. He didn't do it. So the text is telling me he revolted against David in the case of Adoniyahu. He wanted to revolt in the case of Avshalom, but he refrained. That's two assumptions. The assumption is that his agenda is to side with Avshalom, and the assumption that he didn't do it for some reason. Those are two very astounding assumptions. My time alonata, why is it that he didn't rebel against David? Okay, so that's now the next question. In other words, we haven't asked the question, how do you know that he wanted to side with David? We're now asking the question, why is it that he ended up not siding with Avshalom? We haven't asked the question, how do we know that he wanted to side with Avshalom? But now we're asking the question, why he didn't side with Avshalom? Amar Rabbi Elazar, adayin lichluchit shel David kayemet. Because he felt that David would still had a little bit of, to borrow the, to literally translate this idiom, he had some moisture in his bones. He had some vitality. He had some energy. He had some of the vintage David was still there. And so because he had a little bit of vitality in him, therefore he didn't rebel, either because he didn't think it was necessary or he didn't think it was a smart thing to do. Right? David was still David. What do you mean he was still David? Of course. So what was the assumption? The assumption was that he wanted to rebel because he didn't think that David had any vitality left, or that he didn't think, like, what's going on in the story of Shalom? The Chazal went out of the way to tell us that he really wanted to side with Avshalom, but he decided not to. That's really quite an astounding assertion. So there's two things that I want to derive from this source. Number one, ask the question, was Yoav capable of siding with Avshalom's rebellion? Meaning, did Yoav have it in him to have the audacity to side with the rebellion against David's authority? Did Yoav have that in him? There's a simple answer to that question.
Well, he was playing both ends against the middle, sort of.
Okay, we'll get to the why he didn't end up doing it. But does he have it within him to stand up against David and side with the retractor, side with the rebellion? At any point? There's a simple answer to that question. This is not a trick question. Does Yoav have the guts to stand up and side with the rebellion against David?
No, because he had a woman say... tell the story.
Back up. Let's do this again. Vashmu'a ba'a ad Yoav ki Yoav nata acharei Adoniya. Ve'acharei Avshalom lo nata. What is this pasuk telling me? That he sided with Adoniya, but he didn't side with Avshalom. What is it? What am I deriving? What is this text telling me? Did Yoav have it within him to follow one of the sons who would rebel against David? Am I missing something? This is black and white. This is black and white. This is jumping off the page.
Yeah, he did. He followed Adoniel.
Exactly. Of course he had it within him. He followed Adoniel. He was the general of David's army. He went over to the other side. He sided with the rebellion. He sided with Adoniel. He launched a full-scale military coup against David's leadership by siding with Adoniel. Did he have it within him? Of course he had it within him. You see it right here. In other words, that's exactly what Chazal are pointing out. If this text tells me that, of course he had it within him because he sided with Adoniel. Now the only question left is, well, did he not side with Avshalom because he didn't believe in Avshalom's rebellion? Or did he not side with Avshalom for some other extraneous reason we have to identify? Sounds the Gemara, he really wanted to side with Avshalom, but he decided not to because he thought David was still, some aspect of vintage David was still alive and well. But at some point he certainly could, and he did, launch a rebellion against David and side with his opposition. That's clear. You understand what this is? That part of it was not a trick question. We'll get to the trick questions. I'll give you a warning, right? But that's exactly what the Gemara is pulling from this text. Yoav nata acharei Adoniel. That he sided with Adoniel. He's also a military man. He's rebellious. We're going to see a little bit of Yoav's story in a minute. Right? The only question is why he doesn't side with Avshalom, and that we will come back to. That's the Medrash, and it's based on this pasuk. My question is, coming back to our perek, where did Chazal begin to see in the story itself of our chapter, Yoav, the Ishat Ku'it, David, Avshalom, Yoav feeling at some point that he wanted to side with Avshalom? Remember, Avshalom hasn't launched his rebellion yet. Absalom doesn't launch his rebellion until?
2 years. After David forgives him.
Correct. Until David embraces him. David postpones that for 2 more years by refusing to see him. But until that point, Avshalom's intentions are unclear. David has suspicions, clearly, but his intentions are unstated. Where in the story did Chazal see, in the pshat of it, that there was something amiss, or something afoot, I should say, in Yoav's intentions in and Avshalom's preparations for rebellion? So there, I want to take us all the way back to the beginning of the parak and take a good, hard look at Pasuk Aleph. Vayeda Yoav ben Tzruya ki lev hamelech al Avshalom. All of this starts because Yoav ben Tzruya perceives that the king's heart is turned towards Avshalom, meaning, on the face of it, that he saw that David was pining for Avshalom, that David was missing Avshalom, that David had feelings for Avshalom, that David he saw from his words, he was afraid to say, he says to Vatak, he was afraid to tell him directly, so he saw it through a ishat ku'it, but at the end of the day, it's about, he saw that his Liba de Malka lemipak al Avshalom. His heart was yearning, was going out, was pining for Avshalom. And so he wanted to appease or to satisfy, help David satisfy that desire and ultimately reconcile his relationship with Avshalom. That's the assumption. So now we're going to get into a little more of the subtlety of it. Because I ask a simple question. Does Yoav strike us as somebody who is the kind of general whose agenda it is, whose focus it is, whose primary goal it is to make sure that David is constantly happy and successful and emotionally as strong, and if David is missing Avshalom, to kind of come to him and say to David, whatever the king wants, if the king is missing Avshalom, then go and bring Avshalom back, and you'll have a nice Thanksgiving dinner, and you'll have a wonderful reunion, and you'll have Shabbos dinners together, and it'll just be so nice for you. After all I care about is what's good for you, my king. Does that sound like the Yoav we know?
No.
That sounds about as far from the Yoav we know as the moment we met him a book and a half ago. In other words, the oddity, the contrast between everything we know about Yoav and the atmosphere of this pasuk is striking. Yoav understood that David's heart was pining for Avshalom, didn't want to tell him directly, so he went and he brought the Ishat Guit to convince him. Is this about David? Or is it about Avshalom? Or, to put it differently, is it about David? Or is it about Yoav? When David finally agrees, after the Ishat Ku'it's whole message, etc., and David turns to Yoav, and he says to him, in Pasuk Chav Aleph, Vayomer HaMelech Yoav, Hinei Na'asiti Et HaDavar Hazeh, Lech Hashiv Et HaNa'ar Et Avshalom, go bring Avshalom back. Yoav falls on his face, and he prostrates himself to the ground, and he says, and he blesses the king. For what? Blesses the king for bringing the family back and strengthening the royal family and bringing a sense of shalom and happy tranquility to the house of David HaMelech?
No.
ויאמר יואב, היום ידעו דחה, כי מצאתי חן בעיניך, אדוני המלך, אשר עשה המלך את דבר עבדך. Now I know that I have found favor in your eyes because the king has agreed to do that which your servant has requested. Meaning, now I know that I found favor in your eyes because David has agreed to do what Yoav has requested. Who's Yoav in the story? We're talking about Absalom. No, what motivates Yoav, what pushes Yoav to explode in this blessing to the king is the sense of satisfaction that he has that David has agreed to do something Yoav has requested of him. That's vintage Yoav. Now Yoav hasn't gone away. But Yoav's story here is really extraordinary. So why is Yoav pushing to bring Avshalom back? Now, everything we know about Yoav, and I want to do a quick survey of all the moments where we encounter Yoav and David. Everything we know about Yoav is that he is a troublemaker. Yoav enters into a story, our antennae go up, because we know that something's amiss. A good general, loyal to the king, is almost anonymous. A good general who's loyal to the king is almost anonymous because everything he does is in the name of the king. A dangerous general is where the people know the general's name more than they know the king's. Like Uriah, who says to David, has the audacity to say to David, Avdecha Yoav, your servant Yoav is on the field with all of his soldiers and you want me to go take a furlough. Avdecha Yoav, your servant Yoav? Am I missing something? My servant, my master, Adoni, so not Avdecha Yoav, Adoni Yoav, my master Yoav. Adoni Yoav, says the soldier, Adoni Yoav, my master Yoav. What do you mean, my master Yoav? Adoni HaMelech. And if we trace back the story of Yoav, just looking at Yoav under this, there's earlier stories as well with the whole house of Tzruiah, all children of Tzruiah. There are three children of Tzruiah that are identified in David's entourage. We talked a little bit last week about the fact that they are Bnei Tzruiah, David's sister. They are Yoav, Avishai, and Asael, the three sons of Tzruiah. Unfortunately, Asael dies very early. Anybody remember when he died? He dies in the battle with Avner ben Ner in the rebellion in the beginning of Shmuel Bet, when Shaul dies and his son Ishbosheth is put on his throne and David is anointed by Shmuel. And so at that point, there's a civil war that opens between the forces of David and the forces of Ishbosheth. David's forces are led by the three sons of Tzruiah, Yoav, Avishai, and Asael. Ishbosheth's forces are led by Avner ben Ner, who is nephew of or cousin of Shaul. Okay, so that takes us all the way back to Shmuel Bet Perek Bet. There's a whole, David becomes king, and they appoint Ishbosheth to become king over the northern kingdom, and what ensues is a civil war. Avner ben Ner, Sar Tzva Asher L'Shaul, Avner ben Ner, Shaul's general, took Ishbosheth and took him over to Machanaim, and made him king over the northern tribes of Israel, Ephraim, Binyamin, Yisrael, Kulo, and David is in Hebron. And what emerges is a war between these two groups, Avner ben Ner on the one hand, Yoav ben Tzruiah, Avdei David on the other. And they go out to the Brechat Givon, and then there is a champions battle between the champions of Avner and the champions of Yoav, and that battle ends in a stalemate, and they all wipe each other out. And what opens up is a full-scale battle. And in that full-scale battle, what happens is very important because Asael, Yoav's brother, Ayusham Shlosha B'nei Tzuya, Yoav, Avishai, Asael, the three sons of Tzuya, the three generals of David's army. Asael is very quick on his feet. He's running after Avner. Avner stops and he turns and he says to him, "Don't do this. Go away because I don't want to have to kill you." And he refuses. Go away. Why should I have to kill you? Look at that. How will I face Yoav, your brother, if I kill you? Wait a second. You know what he should have said? If I have to kill you in battle, how will I ever face David? It's the king. Now, that's not what worries him. What worries him is, how will I ever face your brother Yoav? Well, he kills him because he continues the pursuit. In the end, in self-defense, Avner kills him. And Vayirdefu Yoav Avishai Achrei Avner, and Yoav and Avishai run after Avner. In the end, that battle ends also in a stalemate. For whatever reason, they all go home. But it ends with Yoav never forgetting that Avner killed his brother Asael. One chapter later, Perek Gimel, the war continues, and eventually, for whatever reason, Ishbosheth and Avner have a falling out. Have to do with the Peleg, not an issue for now. And so Avner sends a message to David. And in his message to David, he says to David, "I will reunite the kingdom. I will bring you all the forces of the northern tribes. Let's make peace between us." And so he says to him, "I will go over to David's side." And he offers David, indeed, David Yisrael, and to establish David's throne. David embraces him. David has him for lunch. David has a whole retreat. Vayishlach Avner Malachim al David, and he says to him, Vayishlach David Malachim al Ishbosheth. He says, Then there's a conversation about Michal, not an issue for now. And they are engaged in a conversation. They have a treaty, lunch. Avner goes home. Who's not there at the table? Probably intentionally. Yoav. I have Avner al David Chevron. He comes to David and Chevron with 20 people as his guests. He asks David Avner al Hashem and Shirito Mishteh. They have a feast together. They break bread together. It's always a tongue twister. And they say, "Yeah, okay, let's unite the tribes." In the meantime, Yoav was out on the field. Yoav comes home. And Avner had left. Avner Avner had gone home. David sent him on his way. They told Yoav, but Avner had lunch with the king. So you know what Yoav did? And he said to him, what do you think he said to him? "Oh, Avner is interested in making peace? That's fascinating. That's wonderful. That would be the most important thing you could do, my king, because that would unite the tribes of Israel under one banner and that would stop all the bloodshed." Is that what Yoav said? Halavai. Vayomer, Me'asiti, what did you do? Hinei ba Avner elecha? You had Avner in your grasp, lama zeshilachto, and you let him go. Yadatat Avner Bener. You don't know this Avner Bener. Don't you know kilefatot chaba? He's only come to deceive you, but ladatat matzacha, and to know your weaknesses, and to spy on you. David doesn't respond. Vayetze Yoav meim David. Yoav leaves. And he sends a message to Avner, and he says, "Oh, you know what? David has a message he wanted to give you. He's not finished. One more paragraph on the negotiations." Avner comes back to Hebron. Yoav takes him aside at the gate to speak to him in silent at the Berito Basheli. Vayakehu shama chomash. And he smote him, he stabbed him in the stomach. Vayamot. And he died. Why did Avner do so? Why did Yoav do so? So the text is very clear. Vayamot bedam asael achiv. This is not national politics. This is personal vengeance. For the blood of Asael, his brother, he killed the general of Ishbosheth's army, who came to David in peace, who came to David in honest, open negotiation. David is so angry because what he's done is he's endangered David's entire political entity. David is a new fledgling king. David has just achieved the major political achievement to unite the tribes of Israel under one leadership. And here his general has assassinated the delegate general from the other side. World wars have started over less than this. So he says publicly, my kingdom are guiltless, are blameless for the blood of Avner Ben-Ner. I relinquish the blood of Avner Ben-Ner. I am not responsible for it. Yachulu al Rosh Yoav. Who is responsible? Yoav. Vilko Beit Aviv. And his house, his father's house. Ve'al yikaret mi'beit Yoav zavu mitzvahu machzik bepelech v'nefel b'chedev v'chasal lachem. And for eternity, Yoav's house will be filled with people who are paupers and who fell by the sword and who lack bread and will die young. And he curses Yoav to no end. Then he has to sit on the floor and he has to make a public display of Avelus, and he tells all of his people, including Yoav, to go and to tear Kriya and to sit Shiva for the death of Avner, so that everybody will know that David was not responsible for this murder. Yeah. And in the end, v'yedu kol ha'am b'chol Yisrael v'yomahu ki lo hayta me'amelech l'amit et Avner b'ner. So everybody finally understood that the king did not put Yoav up to the task of killing Avner, that he did it on his own. You should know that a great prince and great man has fallen this day in Israel. And here he says something which will be the bane of David's kingship. V'anochi hayom rach u'mashuach, mashuach melech. I am today, yirach means weak, it also means young, newly soft, just appointed, just anointed. V'anashim e'ele b'nei tzruya, and these b'nei tzruya, Yoav, Asael, alav shalom at this point, and Avishai, b'nei tzruya, kashim mimeni. They are harder than me, more stubborn than me, more difficult than me. Yeshalem Hashem l'oseh hara k'ra'ato. May God repay the evildoer for his evil. Just a very euphemistic way of saying they'll get theirs in the end. This is the beginning of Shmuel Bet. And from here until the end of Shmuel Bet, Yoav is David's general. Can you imagine that relationship? Yoav is a complex personality. But Yoav is David's general. The one thing David understood very well, and he till the end of his life, is he understood where the people were at. And he understood that the one thing he can't do, as much as he wanted to do, is fire Yoav. Because the loyalty of the people were with Yoav. Yoav could bring the people to David. Yoav could also take the people away. And so he has no choice. And he puts up with his general. And Yoav is very loyal. Yoav fights extraordinary battles for David. Quick glance to Perek Yud Bet. Perek Yud Bet should be very familiar to us. Perek Yud Aleph is Vahilu Chivat Hashanah Le'et Setem Lechim Ve'ishlach David et Yoav et Avadav Imo et Ko Yisov Ve'yashchitu et Bnei Amon. Perek Aleph is the beginning of the story of Batsheva. The story of Batsheva begins because Yoav is out on the battlefield sieging in a two-year siege war at the city of Ammon to starve out the people of Ammon in a tactic that would eventually lead to fewer lives lost, but ultimately a protracted war. And David understands the dangers of a protracted war is sitting in Yerushalayim and falls prey to the very dangers David is so concerned about. We spent a lot of time talking about this parak last year. Parak Yud Aleph, Parak Yud Bet, the story of Natan and David and Batsheva. I want to jump to the end of the parak. At the end of the parak, we have the finishing stage of the battle against Ammon. And finally, Yoav follows the military tactic that David had laid out for him. Vayilachem Yoav b'rabat b'nei Ammon. To conquer, to take down the walls, to his frontal attack, and to end the siege. Vayelkod et Iram Lucha, and he took the royal city. Vayishlach Yoav Malachim al David. He sends messengers to David. And these messengers say the following. Vayomer, Nilchamti b'Rabah, I fought against the city of Rabah. Vagam lachadati et Iramayim, I've taken the city of the source of water for the city. The city is about to fall. Capture the source of water, they have no way of surviving. The source of water is the key to any siege. Yata says Yoav to David, now, Esof Yetra'am, you're sitting in Yerushalayim, go gather the rest of the army. V'chanei al-a'ir, and come and fight the city. V'lachda, and conquer it. Because if you don't, Pen elkod ani et ha'ir v'nikra shmi aleha. Because if you don't, I will. And then I will get the glory. And then the name of this victory will be on my record and not yours, my loyal King David. An extraordinary moment. Now, David understands exactly what he meant. So he gathers his army and he goes to fight and he takes the city. And right, David is very... You have to wonder. It's like, this is the challenge that he has. Yoav never plays the card of the loyal servant to David. He's always a complicated personality, and David has to pull the reins on him at times. There's another a couple of cases after the rebellion. David is on his way back, or was actually on his way out from Yerushalayim, and there's a man from Binyamin, but then of Shimon ben Gera, and he curses David, Avishai ben Tzriah says to David, "Let me go and kill him. This Shimon ben Gera deserves to die." And David's response is, "Mal livelachem b'nei Tzriah? What am I going to do with you? B'nei Tzriah. You're always jumping to kill somebody." On the other hand, all of this was to come to a point, which was that Yoav, as a general, is probably the, from a military standpoint, he's a tactician, and he's very skilled. From a political perspective, he's not the kind of general that David wants to. He's the classic example of keep your friends close and your enemies closer. He's a dangerous foe, dangerous friend. Then we get to the story of the rebellion of Avshalom. And again, I want to come back to the Gemara. Right? All of this is because of the Gemara's question. What side of Avshalom's rebellion was Yoav on? And the answer is he sided with David. The only question is, did he always want to side with David, or did that change at some point in the middle of the story? And the question of why that changed is the key to our understanding of this parak. But I want to jump to the actual rebellion for a second. So in Parak Tadvav, Avshalom starts the rebellion. In Parak Tadzayin, David is fleeing from Yerushalayim. We'll talk about why. And then we have the story of the advisors to Avshalom, Achitophel. We're going to skip that. We're going to go to Perek Yud Chet. Perek Yud Chet is happening on the Perek Yud Chet and Yud Tet is the battle of what we call the Battle of Yair Ephraim. It's the actual final showdown battle between David's forces, led by Yoav, and Avshalom's forces, led by Avshalom's general by the name of Amasa ben Yeter. Remember that name? Amasa ben Yeter is the general of Avshalom's army. So this war is between David and Avshalom, or between Yoav and Amasa ben Yeter. It's a very bloody war. Tens of thousands of people die in this war. David counts his people, he sets his army in place. And David wants to go with them into battle, and he sets the generals in charge of the army. There were three parts to the army, and so a third in the hands of Yoav, a third in the hands of Avishai ben Tsruya, and a third in the hands of Ittai HaGitti, who Ittai HaGitti is for a later time. And then he says to them, I'm going with you. And the people said, no. Lotetze, you, my king, are not coming into the battlefield. If we flee from the battlefield, nobody's going to pay any attention. We could, half our army could die on the battlefield, and it wouldn't matter. But you now are like 10,000, meaning you, if you get killed in battle, the war is over, and so is the kingdom. 10,000 of us are expendable. You stay in the city, you stay in the command post, you help, we're going to war. So David says, fine. Why did David want to go with them into battle? Didn't go into battle Rabbah ben Amon, he stayed in Yerushalayim. Why does David want to go with them to battle so badly? They're going to fight against Avshalom. David has a very specific reason he wants to go with them into battle, and he spells it out for them in the next two psukim. So he says, fine, I will stand this one out. He turns to his three generals and he commands them as follows. Deal gently with my son Avshalom. Spare Avshalom. Whatever you do in this battle, I want to see Avshalom come home alive. This wasn't a private memo. Everybody heard the king's command to his captains to spare Avshalom's life. Why was it so important that everybody hear the king's command to his captains?
Because David wanted Yoav to hear it.
David wanted Yoav to hear it, but he wanted everybody else to hear that Yoav heard it. Follow?
Yep.
In other words, chain of command notwithstanding, does David trust Yoav?
Nope.
Not at all. He knows exactly who he's dealing with. And the Milchama B'Yair Ephraim, and there's tens of thousands, 20,000, 20,000 people die, both sides. It's a terrible battle. And we'll talk about it in great length when we get there. Jump to Pasuk Yud Aleph. Remember the story of how Avshalom gets trapped? Avshalom, because of his long hair, gets trapped by a tree. The tree grabs hold of his hair. The animal runs off, and Avshalom is left hanging. So the man, a soldier, came running to Yoav, and he said to him what he saw. I saw Avshalom hanging by a tree. So Yoav said to him, "Ewa ita, umadua lo hikito sham arza." So why didn't you kill him? You saw him hanging there. Why didn't you kill him? Are you waiting for me to pay you? Is that what you want? So the man turns to Yoav and he says, "No." Pay elef kesef lo shlach yadil ben amelach. You could pay me 1,000 talents of silver. I'm not going to kill the son, the king's son. This is a low soldier. This is a rank and file soldier. Ki beozneinu tziva ha-melech otcha v'et Avishai v'et Itai le'mor shimnu mi banar Avshalom. Don't you remember? Everybody heard the king command the three generals of this army to not touch Avshalom. So Yoav said, I'm not waiting for you. I'm not waiting for anybody else. Yoav goes and he takes Avshalom off the tree, and they literally beat him to death. Yoav, in direct defiance of the king's instructions, kills Avshalom. Why? Subject of discussion, we'll get to this parak. My point from it is, are you telling me that Yoav wanted to side with Avshalom? Gemara says that Yoav wanted to side with Avshalom in this rebellion. Yoav is the one who defies the king's instructions and kills Avshalom. Yoav is the general who leads the army into battle in a bloody battle, the most devastating battle in David's political career, probably, because he's fighting against Avshalom. So why does the Gemara assume that at some point David, Yoav wanted to side with Avshalom? Then it gets more intriguing because in the next parak, I'm going to jump to the end of the discussion right now, but just to kind of see, there's one point that's important to see. After the battle is over, David decides to try to reunite after the civil war, to try to reunite the camp again. And so what does he do? He reaches out to who, of all people? Amasa ben Yeter. Who is Amasa ben Yeter? Remind me.
The general of Avshalom.
Correct. The general of Avshalom's army. But Amasa tumru, halo atzmi v'sariyata, says David to Yoav, go tell, or to his people, go tell Amasa, you are my flesh and blood. Ko yaseh lekim v'cho yasif. Im lo sar tzavati elef anai kol yamim tachat Yoav. I will make you my general in lieu of, instead of Yoav. Yeah. Why?
Because Yoav directly disobeyed his order.
Yoav directly disobeyed his order. So he's going to fire Yoav and replace him with Amasa. Well, that goes well for about a chapter, maybe less. Because at some point or another, Amasa is told by David to go and gather the people together. He's late. He doesn't come. And so David sends Yoav out to find him. And guess what Yoav does when he finds him?
He kills him.
He kills him exactly as he had killed Avner ben Ner. It's the reason why ultimately David asks Shlomo to kill Yoav. Because he is guilty of having killed the two generals of Israel, Avner ben Ner and Amasa ben Yeter. Yoav is the ultimate thorn in David's side. And if there's ever a moment that Yoav had the opportunity to rebel against David and put on the throne somebody of strength and stature, who would be an alternative to David, much more in line with where Yoav thinks or wants to be, it would be here. So let's go back to the assumption of the Gemara. The assumption of the Gemara is that this parak is not about Yoav seeing that David is pining for Avshalom and wanting to do a chesed for David. That's not what this parak is about. What is it about? Says the Gemara. Let's read this carefully. In the end, he doesn't rebel. We'll come back to this. Why? Because he sees that there's a bit of moisture left in David's bones. There's a bit of vintage David still there. And therefore, he refrains from rebellion. refrains from rebellion either because he doesn't think it's the right time, or because he doesn't think it'll be successful, or because he's still siding with David, right? Whatever the circumstances are, which means work our way backwards. Why did he initially want to rebel? Why did he originally think that he would side with Avshalom? Reverse this.
Because he thought David wasn't vital, had lost it.
Correct. Because up until the beginning of Perek Yud-Dalet, Yoav is sitting there and he's watching everything that has transpired from chapter 12 or chapter 11 until now. And he has watched Yoav fighting on the battlefield, David sitting in Yerushalayim. He has watched David in the story of Bathsheba. He has watched Amnon rape his sister Tamar and do nothing about it. He's watched Avshalom challenge David about it, and Yoav and David do nothing. He's watched Avshalom go off into, wait 2 years, and then kill Amnon and run away into exile, and seen David do nothing but tear kriya. In other words, from Yoav's perspective, we've reached a critical point in this kingdom, which is that David is no longer capable of leading this people. He's come to the end of his rope. That's Yoav's assessment. So who's the alternative? What alternative is there? That's exactly the Gemara's assumption. What's the potential alternative to David if David has lost all vitality and strength and leadership?
Avshalom.
Avshalom. Avshalom is the only one to take a position of leadership. Avshalom is the one who took vengeance against Amnon for violating Tamar. Avshalom is the one who's paid the price for it. Avshalom, later in the beginning of chapter 15, will stand in front of the court and argue that he's the only one who can bring law and order to this people. The strength of Avshalom is exactly the weakness of David at this moment in time. So Yoav is looking for Avshalom. The problem is Avshalom is in. Where is Avshalom?
He's in Yerushalayim.
No, he's in Gerar.
In the beginning of this parak, he's in exile.
Right.
Neretz Geshur. He's in exile whether Geshur is up in Syria or Geshur is down in Egypt. He's in Eretz Geshur. He's nowhere to be found.
When Yoav hears that David is pining for Avshalom, to Yoav, that's not a moment of, oh, I need to do something nice for the king.
It's a moment of opportunity.
That's the opportunity to bring Avshalom back. Everything about Yoav's motive here is to bring Avshalom back to Yerushalayim, enabling him to be declared as the heir to the throne. That's Yoav's agenda. That's exactly what Chazal saw when they said, Bikesh Lintot. Everything about the story was a setup for Yoav to side with Avshalom. Bikesh Lintot. He wanted to rebel. He wanted to side with Avshalom. His orchestrating of this entire story is to bring Avshalom back. He can't just confront David. Can you imagine if he confronted David and said to David, David, you need to pardon Avshalom. Avshalom is guilty of genocide, of fratricide, and he's guilty of regicide, killing his brother and killing the heir to the throne. You need to pardon him. You know what David would do? That's even the suggestion is treason. Even the suggestion is treason. Yoav is in exile because Yoav escaped the gallows.
Avshalom.
So instead, Yoav takes this opportunity, Lev HaMelech al Avshalom, to play as Yoav so skillfully does that card.
and to bring the Isha Chachama from Tekoa, and to hide the motive, to hide the story, and to hide his role, and to ultimately convince David via a third party to bring Avshalom home. And it would have worked. It would have worked. Except for a problem, which we will identify, B'ezrat Hashem, over the next 2 weeks, in the flaw in the Isha HaTku'it's description of the issue. So we'll come back to what she says and the flaw that gives away Yoav's hand. But when Yoav, when David confronts the Isha HaTku'it and says to her, Hayad Yoav, don't hide this from me. Is that because he wanted to go back to Yoav and say, thank you, Yoav, for this wonderful suggestion to bring back Avshalom? Or because he's pulled away the rug from underneath Yoav's plot and recognized that this was all a ruse to get Avshalom back, to pardon Avshalom, and therefore to enable Avshalom to run around the city with horses, chariots, and proclamations. Hayad Yoavitach. And the moment she says yes, she recognizes that David is far smarter than anybody else. V'adoni chacham k'chachmat malachei Elokim. V'adat kol hashem ha'aretz. They can't hide anything from you. V'yomer ha'melech Yoav. So the king turns to Yoav. And you know what? Yoav, the king can also play this game. He's very good at it. Hinena asiti et hadavar hazeh. Lech hashev et hanar et Avshalom. Go bring Avshalom back. My dear king, my dear Yoav, you're right. Embrace Yoav. Yoav falls on his face. Yoav says, oh, I feel it's like the ultimate Haman moment here. David says to Yoav, go bring Avshalom back. And Yoav says, oh, this is all about me. Right? Oh, I'm so pleased the king is going to follow my counsel. He's going to bring Avshalom back. And do what? Embrace him, kiss him, pardon him. Oh, the king is finally going to listen to his servant Yoav. It's like the ultimate Haman moment. So Yoav goes, and he brings Avshalom to Yerushalayim. And what does the king say? Yisov el bito. Now he goes home to his house, house arrest. He will not step foot in this palace. And Avshalom's mouth is dropping and Yoav's mouth is dropping. What did you just do? You brought him back to send him to house arrest? I thought you were bringing him back to pardon him. Oh no, I brought him back, but not to pardon him. I brought him back, but not to come back to the palace. Steps foot in this palace and he launches a full-scale rebellion. Send him back, send him to his house. That's exactly what he does. Ufanai lo yireh. So he goes home. And he doesn't see Avshalom. Avshalom is royal material. Avshalom lo ya yafeh. And he had hair, and he was handsome. He batar. And he said, in house arrest for 2 years. David refuses to see him. And finally, Avshalom sends a message to Yoav. But you know what Yoav does? Avshalom sends a message to Yoav. And he says to Yoav, send me to the king. I didn't come back to Yerushalayim to sit under house arrest. Send me to the king. And Yoav, you know what Yoav does? Yoav refuses to see him. Yoav refuses to talk to Avshalom. Violate the king's command, house arrest, he's off limits. Yoav is playing the yes man. Suddenly, the loyal, obedient Yoav. Why? Why? Adayin l'chluchit shel David kayemet. Whatever motivation David has for not seeing Avshalom, if there was an act of vintage David, strong leadership, David is not yet gone,
it's in that moment where he lets Avshalom come home, but refuses to see him. That's vintage David. That says to Yoav, something's afoot. Yoav doesn't know what it is. Yoav's not playing the game. Yoav doesn't understand. But one thing he can do is lay off. And so he plays the distance card. He doesn't seek Avshalom. He doesn't talk to Avshalom. Finally, 2 years later, he burns the field and he gets Avshalom, Yoav angry, and Yoav finally comes to see him, and he explains to Yoav he really wants to see the king, and why is he not letting him, and what did he bring him back from Eretz Geshur for? He should have stayed in Eretz Geshur. And finally, Yoav comes to the king and convinces him to see Avshalom. And that's when the rebellion starts. Okay, so what changed? Had the rebellion started the moment David came back to, sorry, the moment Yoav, let's do this again. Had the rebellion started the moment Avshalom came back to Yerushalayim, with whom would Yoav have chosen a side?
Probably Avshalom.
That's exactly what the Gemara is saying. Had the rebellion started the moment Avshalom came back to Yerushalayim, Yoav would have sided with Avshalom. The rebellion would have started and ended at the same moment David was done. By sending him to his house, by not seeing him, by giving him a 2 years distance, whatever that achieved in those 2 years, we'll talk about. That's the next 2 weeks. Whatever was achieved in those 2 years, one thing changed. When the rebellion did start, and David enables the rebellion to start by embracing Avshalom finally and pardoning Avshalom finally, but when it starts, where is Yoav?
With David.
So whatever those 2 years did, it enabled Yoav to change back to stay with David until the end. And that ultimately is it's subtle, it's small, but for David, it's life-saving. Because as long as Yoav doesn't go over to the other side, he has a hope of eventually putting down this rebellion. And that's exactly what he does. So we're going to stop here. We still have our work cut out for us. What we've done today is looked at the story of Yoav and seen in this perek a transition between where it starts, where Yoav starts at the beginning of the perek, and where Yoav starts at the and where Yoav ends up at the end of the perek. And everything in between revolves around the conversation between David and the Ishat Guit. So that's our next agenda for the next 2 weeks, is to understand what she presents to David, what David hears, what David understands, and ultimately how he plays the story of Avshalom.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm. All right, 35, so I'm going to stop here. So if anybody needs to clock out, that's fine. I'll take a
couple
question.
A couple of times Avshalom is referred to as Hanar and not Bini. Is there anything to that?
Yeah, probably a term of endearment.
Which one? Hanar.
For sure. La'atli le'na'ar la'avshalom. Na'ar is in the context is a description of my young. He's not young. He's how old is he at this point? He's at least 20 something. Na'ar avshalom, my young avshalom, my baby. Right. David refers to him as la'atli le'na'ar la'avshalom. Right. My baby.
And there was a lot of emphasis put on beauty.
Yes. So we talked about that last week.
Yeah.
We talked about the connection and in the difference between how David saw that role versus how the rest of the people, or certainly Yoav, saw him kingly in that regard, stature, worthy of kingship, and therefore David's behavior even odder. Everything revolves around who's going to be David's successor. And to the people, it's anybody but Shlomo. or anybody but the son of Bathsheba. And to David, it's the son of Bathsheba or nobody. And so everything here ultimately leads in that direction.
And the woman was described, David on her deathbed, was beautiful.
Correct, but that's also in contrast. David doesn't touch her. David doesn't engage with her, right? And that's intentional. But the only one who knows that is Bathsheba. So that's we'll get to that story too.
Okie doke. Thank you.
Have fun. Have a great week.
Thanks, Rai.
Thank you.
Thank you.